as well as, you know, try to make a living for themselves. So when I was very young, after I was born, I was raised by my grandparents for the first, I would say, 2 or 3 years. And it wasn't until being 1995 that, you know, my parents were finally, you know, settled down in the state of Kansas in the United States and be ready to kind of take me on. So in 1995, I flew to the U.S. And when I got there, I found out very quickly that, you know, my parents became Christians. So as a result of that, as I'm sure some of you guys know, I was brought to church every Sunday. And from going, eventually moving from the United States to Australia, where we lived there for around a year, and eventually moving to Canada and settling down finally in Canada, I was brought to church ever since, like a lot of you guys. And so growing up from, you know, elementary school through middle school, through high school, you know, kind of just went with the flow, you know, kind of just brought to church every Sunday. You know, was taught the Bible, was taught from, you know, different Sunday school teachers and many different leaders. And, you know, growing up, I really didn't really question anything. Kind of just, you know, just kind of took everything as it is. And to be honest, didn't really care that much, actually. I was a pretty bad kid when I was a kid. I didn't really care. I just skipped Sunday school and just go, like, playground and stuff. But anyways, it wouldn't be until my late teens, almost near finishing high school, around 18, I would say 18, 19, that I really started looking at my faith a lot more closely and really started to question it. Especially at the time, you know, I was struggling with a lot of private sin in my life as well. So, you know, it was like, and also at the time I was thinking of a lot of like philosophical questions. It's a lot of life, huge life questions that, you know, philosophers still talk about today, you know, like, you know, why there's war, you know, why is there still poverty, you know, why is this and why is that, right? So I just thought a lot, and during that time, you know, a lot of confusion started arising in my life. So it wouldn't be until I say 2010, where everything kind of accumulated, and I really faced what I would call the identity crisis with myself during that year. And that year, I would just be totally lost and confused where I was standing. You know, I was, again, struggling with private sin, but at the same time, Sundays, I was still going to church, right? So I was really living this kind of hypocritical kind of life. So I was kind of half dipping on both sides and, you know, was just kind of completely lost. And after I realized my current state, I realized, no, I can't stay in this state forever. So after kind of taking a step back and taking some time really, really reflecting on the why am I going through this quote-unquote crisis, I realized that it was as a result of one fundamental question. And this question is a question I never really looked in the mirror and faced. And the question was simply this: is God really real? That's the question. That was the question. Is God really real? Because, you know, growing up, you read so much things in the Bible. You know, you see God, you know, split the Red Sea. You know, you see, you know, Elijah, you know, fire coming from heaven, like crazy stuff, right? Like you see in the movies, right? And, you know, you see Jesus, you know, healing the sick and raising the dead and all that stuff. So crazy stuff, right? So I had a hard time relating that to my real world life in the 21st century in North America, right? So ultimately, that was the issue that I was facing. And almost immediately when I realized that, you know, this was the root of all of this identity crisis, and at the root of it, a particular word came to me, and it comes from the book of Jeremiah. Okay, this is not working. You want to go next slide? It's not. it's not working for me. Some technical difficulties here. Yes, it's on. Oh, there we go. Oh, I have to put it here? I have to aim it here? Okay, got it. Okay, cool. So yeah, so the word came to me, it came from the book of Jeremiah. So this is God talking to Jeremiah, and it says something: you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord. And I will go on checking different places in the Bible, and there'll be many places where God promises to us that if you seek him with all your heart, that's a condition, with all your heart, I will be found by you. So when I really saw that, and I saw this in many places in the Bible, I knew, okay, I found the key to finally address this, you know, root issue. And I reasoned it out like this: okay, if God is really out there, okay, if I take this verse seriously, if I go all out in seeking after God with everything I have, complete focus, based on his word, he has to reveal himself to me. He has no choice, because God cannot lie. So There's many places in the Bible where God says that, you know, he cannot lie. So here's one verse from the book of Numbers. It says, God is not a human that he should lie, not a human being that he should change his mind. Does he speak and then not act? Does he promise and not fulfill? And you go on to many places where it says that God can't lie from his word. So I reason that like this, okay, if God cannot lie, and what he says has to happen, then I thought, okay, if I just go all out in that verse, like seeking with everything I have, with all my heart, then he has to show himself to me. And if he doesn't, then I can kind of just like conclude that, okay, it's not real then. It's just something that, you know, people came up with or whatever, right? So that was kind of how I reasoned it. So after that, I made a deal with God. You can call it, quote unquote, a deal or ultimatum with God. I told God this, okay, so God, this is what I'm going to do. For 1 year, I'm going to just go crazy seeking after you with everything I have. I'm going to sacrifice a year of my life. I'm going to focus on just seeking after you with everything. And if you don't show me and can convince me that you're really there, then I'm just going to give up this Christian thing, religious thing. I'm just going to go do whatever the heck I want in the real world, right? So that was the deal. But if you do show something to me, like some sort of experience or something that you can convince me, okay, then I'll recommend my life back to you. So that was kind of the deal. And immediately after I made this deal with God, I actually went to the dictionary first, actually, I tried to make sure I understood what the word seeking actually means, and the word heart, when it says with all your heart. Because when I first read it, I didn't really get it, so I tried to, you know, make sure I found, like, you know, the root Greek or the root Latin meaning of that word, to make sure I really understood what that meant, right? So after I thought, you know, I got everything figured out, I knew exactly how I'm going to go about this, you know, I would go crazy and seek after God. I would, like, read my Bible every day, I'd try to study different translations, you know, I would check out different churches from different denominations, different videos, check out different books. You know, I just go crazy, right? And at some point, I learned that, you know, God is a spirit. He's not a human, physical human, so I'm not going to find a physical human being. So I started praying and meditating and fasting for long periods of time, right? So try to be spiritual and all that, right? And so I'll go these, like, long prayer walks in the mornings, late at nights, you know, pray for my own. I even attempted to try to pray all night. I tried that because Jesus did that, right? So I tried that anyways. So during that period, my parents thought I was crazy, right? They thought I was nuts. They thought I was, you know, turning into some sort of monk or some sort of hermit or something, right? So they thought I was crazy. But it was just something I had to do. So I kept doing that. And to be honest with you guys, for the first, I would say, 2 months, nothing really unusual happened in my daily routine. Everything was still pretty much the same. I will probably estimate around probably 3 months going in, I started noticing some unusualities in my daily routine. For example, just something normal, like I would just be driving one day, right? Going on a daily normal route that I always go on, and I would hit this intersection, right? And, you know, after checking my blind spot, checking there's no cars and everything, you know, I would, you know, make my left turn, right? And as I'm making it halfway, I would notice a car, incoming car, like literally, it seems like it's literally two meters away from me. It looks like it's really about to T-bone my car. So I'm just kind of bracing, like, panicking, like, oh no, I'm just gonna, you know, get into this accident. You know, best case scenario is just hit my rear, maybe, and, you know, I'm still good. So, but as it's happening in real time, it literally seems like the car just slips by my car, almost like it's going through my car, slips, and I would just successfully make that turn. And afterwards, I'd just park at the curb and just be panicked, be like, what the heck just happened? That's crazy, right? That's never happened. So that was one instance that was kind of nuts. So that'll be one instance. Another instance will be, I'll just have just a normal conversation I'll be having with my family. I'll be having a conversation with my mom one day. And she will bring up this particular thing. She'd be like, you know what? You know, all my years in church, it's been one or twice where I'll be worshiping God and I'll feel like a presence on me so heavily that I would just start crying with floods of tears. And then she would just ask me, have you had that experience before? I'm just like, no, that's kind of weird. Why are you just crying randomly, right? And so that was kind of weird. She never mentioned this. She said some sort of present on her and start crying. Like, that's kind of crazy. Why are you crying? And another instance will be, I'll be talking to my grandma, who actually lives in mainland China. She's not a Christian, obviously. Everyone in China, I'm sure you guys know, you know, it's an atheist country. There's no beliefs in whatsoever. But when I went there, I was speaking with her. She brought up, like, how the last couple months before I went back to see her, you know, she'd been having these dreams about this old man dressed in white coming to her and trying to reach out and help her, and she couldn't really see who she was, like, decipher who this person was. So she was asking me, you know, because she knew, you know, I went to church, like, you know, who do you think that is? I'm like, I don't know, Grandma Santa Claus? I don't know, like, I don't know, like, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, is that Jesus, maybe? Like, I don't know, it's kind of crazy. So that kind of thing started happening, and another thing started happening, I will call upon these, you know, crazy, incredible stories that I never came upon before. It was just weird. And this one story is about this little girl in Illinois, the States, called Akina Granrick. I don't know if some of you guys have heard her name before. You might have. Her story actually went on the news and was all over the place. Long story short, she was basically born in an atheist family, okay? And at the age of four, she told her parent that she told her parent that God has been speaking to her, that, you know, she didn't hear God speaking to her, been giving her dreams and visions, and even a couple times been taking her to heaven and so forth. And afterwards, she told her parents that God's telling her to put everything she sees in poetry and in drawings. So at the age of four, she would just start drawing and painting. And by the age of eight, this would be some of the paintings she's put together. So you can tell very quickly, this is not a normal 8-year-old, 7-year-old kid, okay? And when I saw that, I was like, holy snap, this is crazy, right? Like, I'm like, God, you're still doing this kind of thing? You're still giving people dreams and visions? So this is the first one that kind of shook me. Now I came upon also another story, and this story is about a boy, I think he's from Nebraska. You might have heard of him, his name is Colton Burple. I don't know if some of you guys might have heard of his also. It went viral on the news and everything a couple years back. Long story short, basically, when he was very young, he got to a situation where he was rushed to the hospital, and the surgeon had to perform an emergency surgery on him. And during the procedure, they really thought, her parents thought that they were going to lose their kid. And his dad, who was actually a local pastor in their area, was especially upset with God. He really thought that God was going to take his kid away, and that his life was going to crumble apart. Long story short, Colton survived that surgery, okay? And after that situation, not very long later, he started mentioning things to his dad that in no ways that he should have known, okay? For one, he'll mention to his dad, he'd be like, hey dad, you know, when I was worked on by the surgeon, how come you were in the chaplain room all the way on the other side of the hospital? Why were you yelling at God? And when his dad heard that, I was like, that's kind of weird. Like, how do you know I was in the other room? Because he was by himself, he didn't tell anyone, right? And then Colton's like, well, you know, I saw you when you were yelling at God, and I saw my body being worked on by the surgeon, I saw you in the other room. And then his dad, at that point, that just caught his dad's attention. And he would go on saying how, you know, when during that procedure, like, you know, I was actually taken from my physical body and brought to heaven, and Jesus actually brought me to heaven. So that just totally blew his dad's mind, right? And afterwards, Colton would just continue mentioning these things. Another thing he would mention is that when he was brought to heaven, he met another sister, like a little girl came, saw him and came up, gave him a big hug. And he would just describe that experience. And when his dad heard that, he merely went to his wife and told his wife what Colton was saying. And when his wife heard that, she just started crying. As she basically confirmed that a couple years back, when she was pregnant, the baby in her stomach was going to be a girl. However, it miscarried. So ever since that, she was devastated, okay? And when Colton mentioned that she saw her sister, which was that miscarried child, she was just totally blown away, totally shocked, right? And so this story, you know, just goes crazy around their community, right? And another thing that Colton mentioned is that he will also meet his great-grandfather, okay? So when he mentioned that, his dad wanted to kind of verify that story, right? He's like, okay, so he got out like a family album, showed him a bunch of pictures, like, okay, this is a great-grandfather, is this who you saw in heaven? And he would go through it, be like, no, this is not it. And it wouldn't be until this one last page, one last picture, where Colton would be like, hey, stop, there, that's it. That's my great-grandfather. And when you look at it, it's the only young picture of his great-grandfather. It's like a picture of great-grandfather when he's like 20 or 30. And Colton will say that, hey, dad, you know, when I go into heaven, everyone is young. There's no old people in heaven, okay? So that just kind of totally just rocked his dad's world, right? And this next part of Colton's story is kind of what rocked me particularly. So because Colton declared that, you know, Jesus took him to heaven, his dad, who's a pastor, was curious, you know, I want to know what Jesus looked like, right? So he would ask Colton, hey, so you saw Jesus, what did he look like? So Colton would try to describe it. Like, he's like a 6-year-old kid, right? You know, he's trying to describe it, he can't really do it. So his dad showed him a bunch of pictures, right? bunch of paintings that people have, you know, drawn in terms of what they thought Jesus looked like, right? They'd go on Google Images and just show them a bunch of pictures of Jesus, right? And he'll go through it and he'll be like, no, none of it, no, that's not it, right? None of it is it. And it wouldn't be until one evening, they're watching the news, right? And it might be, I don't know, CNN or something. And Akina's story, so the first girl's story was on the news, okay? It went viral as well across the states. And talking about her story, and later on, it mentions about a new painting that she put together that she titled The Prince of Peace, okay? And it's basically her depiction of what Jesus looked like based on her quote-unquote heavenly experience, right? And when his dad saw it, immediately he grabbed Colton and grabbed Colton over. He's like, hey, Colton, take a look at this. Is this it? Is this what you saw? And when he looked at it, he'd be like, and looked at his dad, he's like, yeah, dad, that's what I saw. So this picture, oh, this heaven's for real. By the way, yeah, so his story went viral, became a best-selling book, it became a movie. Some of you guys might have watched it. And this is the picture that Akira drew at the age of, I think, around 9. And it's the picture also that both Colton and Akira confirmed is what they saw in their spiritual experience. So that year, a lot of crazy things happened that year. I can't go through everything that happened. But at some point during that year, I would feel to be led to go on this short-term mission trip. And I eventually went with this organization called ON. Quote unquote, it stands for Operation Mobilization. It was actually during a co-op term. I was in university during a co-op term. And halfway through, I just told my manager, like, I really feel like I gotta go to this mission trip. I can't finish the co-op term. So she's like, she gave her a blessing, and she's like, yeah, go for it. So I will go to London, England, for a short-term mission trip. And when I got there, you know, I would meet some incredible people from all across the world. You know, people from like South Korea, people from the States, from the Middle East, from the Mediterranean, a lot of amazing people. And you know, I would just hear about some incredible things that, you know, they would go through, and hear stories about like how in the Muslim world, especially in the Middle East, you know, a lot of hardcore Muslims are becoming Christ followers because they have radical like vision or a radical dream that just totally turned their life around. So when I heard that, I thought, whoa, that's kind of crazy, right? I would meet this woman who's actually also from the GTA, surprisingly enough, and she would share how, you know, when she was in UFT, when she was in university, she found that she had lung cancer, okay? And after she found that out, not long after, I think a friend kind of brought her to this quote-unquote worship temple. I guess it was like a more Pentecostal charismatic church. And during the service, halfway through, the preacher was stopped midway, go up to her and tell her that, you know, I need to tell you something, that God's going to do a miracle in your life. And when she heard that, she thought that was kind of weird. She was kind of shocked as well because she didn't tell anyone about her condition. And not long after that situation, she would go back to doctors to kind of verify that word. And when they checked it, you know, they were all just completely shocked. The cancer was just completely gone, okay? And that just turned her, you know, just turned her like 360 degree, and she gave her life to Christ ever since. I will also meet, I think, a man from the Mediterranean, like from Bahrain or something. And he would share how, you know, he was a Muslim. He was raised up in a Muslim family, hardcore Muslim. And he had like what I will call an Apostle Paul experience. He literally had an open vision of Jesus, okay, at some point. And he said that, you know, that experience totally rocked him. Like, we saw Jesus like live, open vision. And that just turned his total life around. And eventually was called to full-time missionary ever since. Now, that year, I would say, kind of accumulated in this next experience that I'm going to share with you guys. So at some point, I attended what I would call, well, what they call a quote-unquote spiritual healing training, okay? It was this large church in the GTA. I guess it was more charismatic Pentecostal church. And they were holding this, you know, healing training, right? So I thought that was interesting because I never had that growing up in my church, because I guess our church was more conservative, right? Never had that. So I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. You know, why not check it out? I had nothing to lose, right? I can go check it out. So I go to their building, in the particular section of the building where they have a quote-unquote healing building. And when I went there, there'd be a crowd of people there. And the leader at that service would divide us up. So half of those who came to, you know, want to learn about quote-unquote spiritual healing. And another group of people that was there just to be prayed for, people from the community, people from the congregation that maybe have some sort of physical ailment that they want to be prayed for, okay? So for those of us there who are just to learn, the leader brought us aside, you know, gave us some materials, teaching materials, and afterwards, you know, kind of very, not, it was probably like 10 minutes going through everything, and then ended with this last verse. Okay, and this is what Jesus says in Mark 16, okay? Before, you know, after he was resurrected and before he goes back to heaven. So this is Jesus talking to his disciples. And these signs shall follow them that believe. In my name they shall cast out devils, they shall speak with new tongues, they shall take up serpents, and if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them. They shall lay hands on the sick and they shall recover, okay? And after he said that, he kind of just closed his notes, put it aside, and looked at us and be like, okay, guys, now we're just going to pair you up with one of these sick people, and I want you to just put your hands on them and just pray for them, just believe that God will heal them. And I'm just looking at him like, okay,
if you say so, sir.
And so they paired me up with a Caucasian woman, okay? I would say she's probably around her 40s and 50s, and I would just ask her, okay, so ma'am, you know, what's wrong with you? And she'd be like, well, last year I got into this car accident, and ever since that incident, you know, I messed up my back, and I can't fully rotate my shoulders. And I'm just like, okay, can I pray for you? She's like, yeah. So she turns around, and I put my hand on her back, and I try to focus, right? Just like, and just start praying, try to focus, try to muster any faith that I had in me and just pray for her, right? And after I was done, I asked her, so how do you feel? Like, how's your back? So she would look at me, and then she would try and move her shoulder, be like, you know what? I think it's actually a little better. And at this point, I'm just kind of shocked. I'm like, really? So I was like, okay, why don't I pray for you again? Maybe we can get it to 100%, right? She's like, yeah, go ahead. Let's try again. Okay, I was like, okay, let me pray for her again. So I pray for her again, try to focus again, try to pray. And as I'm praying, I literally feel some sort of warm sensation on my hand, but I try to ignore it and just keep praying. I try to ignore that, right? I keep praying. And after I'm done praying, I ask her again, so how do you feel now? And she'll look at me again, and she'll try to move her shoulder, and she'll be like, you know what? I feel some sort of heat on my back, and I feel like the pain's going away. And at that point, I'm just totally mind-blown, right? I'm just like, oh, snap, right? This is crazy. So I walk out of that building that day, kind of have some sort of, I'll be just on adrenaline. I'll be like, holy snap, God, just what just happened, God? That's just crazy what just happened, right? And by the same time, I will have a mix of emotions in my mind as well. And it wouldn't be like a couple of days afterwards where, surprisingly enough, I after doing some self-evaluation, I would notice like certain doubts still creep back into my mind about that situation. I would start thinking, you know, what really did happen that day? You know, was it like just some sort of placebo effect or something? Some psychological, mental thing? You know, some mind trick? You know, what really happened, right? You know, she said that she was really healed, but why am I still questioning it? And after kind of pondering on that, a particular story came to me, and it's the story of when the disciples was on a boat in the middle of the lake, and they saw a man walking towards them, which they thought was the Lord, right? Walking on water. And this is the story. So it's in Matthew 14, verses 28-31. And this is Peter talking, right? So he thinks it's the Lord walking towards, but he just wanted to confirm if it is the Lord, okay? And Peter says this, Lord, if it is you that's walking towards me, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water, okay? So he wanted kind of just like, okay, if you're really God, let me walk on water too, right? To confirm that. So Jesus was like, yeah, should I come, right? So then Peter got down out of the boat and he walked on the water, okay? And came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, so he saw some sort of wind around himself, he was afraid and began to sink, cried out, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus reached out his hand, caught him, and said, you of little faith. He said, why did you doubt? So when I went back to the story and read it, I just thought, Peter, you must be crazy, right? Like, think about it. If you put yourself in Peter's shoes, and I try to do that for myself, okay? And I'm thinking, okay, if I'm Peter, I'm in this boat, okay? And I see this man walking on water towards me, okay? I want to verify if that's really the Lord, okay? I'm like, yeah, hey, Lord, if that's you, let me walk on water too. He's like, yeah, sure, come. So I come. I put one foot on the water, and I don't sink. I'm standing on water at this point. I take another step, and I'm still standing on water. I take a couple more steps. At this point, I'm literally walking on water. So literally, I'm experiencing this miracle at this point, okay? So I don't know how Peter's faith couldn't be just like crazily jacked up at this point. But for whatever reason, because he saw some wind, okay, while he was standing on the water, he started doubting. He wasn't so in this verse it says he was afraid, but really he wasn't afraid because Jesus said it. Why did you doubt? He started doubting for whatever reason, even though he already walked on water, okay? And he began to sink. So when I saw this story, I realized what I was going through. I was going through the exact same thing. I experienced literally a miracle, okay? But for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because of my education, I don't know because of too much knowledge from schooling, I don't know what it was, like too much psychology classes, I don't know. But for whatever reason, the miracle happened and I started doubting still. And after reflecting, and I realized that it seems that a lot of us, okay, I don't want to speak for all of humanity, okay, but I think a lot of us naturally tends to drift towards pessimism and doubt, naturally. This is human nature, this is natural. If the Apostle Peter can doubt like this, you're walking on water already and you're still doubting, you must be nuts, right? So if the Apostle Peter can still doubt, I realize that, okay, this is probably some human condition we're in, okay? This seems like us human beings, or a lot of us, just naturally tends to doubt, okay? And I realized that at the end of that year, you know, ultimately, I was going to have to make a choice, okay? After everything that I experienced that year, everything that, you know, all the people I met, all the things that God showed me, I'm going to have to make a choice, okay? Am I going to stand on the side of the world and just kind of ignore everything that happened that year and just take it as a fluke, or take it as, just some sort of scientific thing, or am I going to stand on the side of faith, okay? And after doing a lot of self-reflection, I realized that even if I wanted to stand on the side of the world and give up everything that God has shown me, I would be lying to myself. I really would be. You know, if I just start sitting and just doing all the worldly and society thing, I'd be lying to myself. I realized that. So I went to God at the end of that year. I was like, okay, God, you win. Okay, you got me. Okay, I can't deny you, right? Even if I wanted to. So that year for me was an awakening year type of year. And I just want to leave with everyone this. After that year, I'm more convinced than ever that the most important thing that any human being can do at some point in their lives is set aside a period of time. For me, it was a year. I don't know what time is for you. Because for the seeking with all your heart thing, I told God, I can't do this for the rest of my life. I can't seek you with all my heart for 80 plus years, all right? So I gave him a year, okay? I don't know what that time is for you, but it's very important, I believe, that for any humans to set a period of time and literally go all out in seeking and searching after God with the pure intention of simply this. You simply just want to know the truth. That's it. That's it. Nothing else. No other selfish desires. Not because I want a Bugatti from God. No. Literally because I want to just know the truth. That's it. And at the end of that period of time, make a firm choice and decision on which side you're going to stand on. Not sitting on the fence, not like half dipping like I was, half foot in church and half foot in sin, okay? But literally make a choice, right? Because ultimately, whatever you guys decide to stand on, you know, will determine your destiny and ultimate fate in life. Okay. That's my time. Thank you very much.
Thank you for Brother Jean's sharing. It's just a lot of things I didn't know about you before this sharing. So as a response song, let's sing What a Beautiful Name one more time. Please all rise.
Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, we thank you. You are the great God. You are the God controlled the time and history and all human in the world and our life. Everything's in your hands. You are the all King of Kings. Thank you, Lord. Every one of us, if we're willing to seeking you,